And welcome back to the 50-50 podcast presented by Physical Athletics, our proud partners, Physical Athletics. You can find them on all social media platforms at Physical Athletic, that's F-Y-Z-I-C-A-L, Athletic, as well as on their website at physicalathletics.com. My next guest, he marks something that is way overdue. He marks our first junior college NJCAA coach on the show, on the podcast. Very excited to have him. He's doing tremendous things out in the great state of Tennessee. Big fan of his. He is the head coach of the Columbia State Community College program out in Columbia, Tennessee, Coach Colton Bryant. Coach, how are you?
Great. Yourself?
I'm doing great. Thank you for being with us today.
Yes, sir.
All right. So, hey, we're going to dive right in. Coach, we're glad to have you on here. You mark our first, as I stated, our first junior college coach, so which is obviously become a very, very heightened or highlighted level of play this past year in light of many of the things that we've encountered with COVID. So we try not to really make it much about COVID, but obviously you also can't ignore it. So talk to us a little bit in the 10 month, we're 12 months, we're a year into the pandemic now. Describe your experience in leading your program during COVID and what you've learned.
In terms of keeping it going during the COVID bit, it was just more of one was trying to figure out what to figure out, because we none of us had ever really, you know, had to deal with something like this before. And so it became a big question mark on what do we do? What is our administration going to allow us to do? Does it hamper recruiting? What will this do? Will we have any bans on specific countries coming in to play? There's loads of different like recruiting things on that end. But when the pandemic first hit, my biggest concern was how to get our players. Because, you know, one of the big things as a JUCO coach is not only are you trying to always bring in the team to build your team, make it better. But, you know, your next step is then to move them on and get them out. And so we immediately started looking into different options, and it just, you know, push came to shove and VO came to light. And so the first thing we did was actually acquire a VO, to where I knew during the season, no matter what happened, we would have like loads of recruiting content. So let's say in the fall, if we didn't get to play any scrimmages, you know, we'll at least have like right now, I think we have 62 uploads. So if you're looking at an hour and a half to 2 hours each, you know, you're looking at around 120 hours of recruiting content. And so that was huge.
That's great stuff. And so you mean to tell me that you didn't have any previous pandemic management experience? I'm a little disappointed, Coach, to be honest.
No, none at all. Not a clue.
Yeah, no, I think that obviously that marks all of us. So no, that's well said. And hey, Coach, since you got a little plug in there for VO for our listeners that may not know what that is, can you expand on that a little bit? Talk a little bit about it.
I kind of lost you. I can't hear anything or see you.
So, Coach, since you mentioned it, talk to us a little bit. You had a little plug in there for VO. Tell us a little bit about what VO is and what your experience has been with it.
Yeah, so what VO is it's a camera that it's a 180 degree camera, and it has two eyes. And basically, two cameras within it that look like eyes. And one of the eyes will basically watch, you know, half of the field, and then the other eye will watch the other half of the field, and then basically what you do once it's so simple, you just sit it on top of the tripod, put the tripod up, and then press go on your phone. And then basically from there, the only downfall of VO is the upload time, in which they've said that they have found a way to minimize that. So we're excited for that update to come up. But basically once it uploads, what it does is it takes the images of the two eyes and puts it together. And so it almost looks like there's a drone flying around the field, but there's not. And then what that has changed for us is multiple things. Like now, you know, used to you're trying to figure out how to find a person to be at every game to film. Now I don't have that worry at all, but now I can film every practice. And with VO, you have unlimited upload space. So it's not like you're limited to how much you can have. And so that's helped us a lot, because, you know, we're not a school that has those big, you know, massive indoor facilities and all this. So, you know, when rain happens and you're not able to get maybe into a facility to train, instead of canceling, you can always now set up a Zoom and pull up VO footage. You can go over a training session or over a game or, you know, whatever it might be. And I think that that sort of changes the whole element of just information you can provide to players, not to mention, you know, iPhones are great. You can screen record. And so little scenarios that maybe you don't want to point out to the group because it might be a good individual thing. Well, then you can screen record it and then send it to a player and talk to them about it on a side note.
That's great stuff. That's great stuff. Yeah, kind of definitely wanted to mention it once you said I wanted to follow up on that, because I know still a lot of people that are relatively unaware of VO or maybe have seen it, but just didn't know what it was. So thank you for mentioning that, Coach. Okay, so moving on. 3 years, you're going into 3 years in your time at Columbia State. How's it going, and what's kind of surprised you so far?
Yeah, it's going, honestly, it's going really, really well. When we first started it in 2018, we had 3 months prior to the first day of preseason when we were approved. So I was looking around and like, I didn't have an office. I didn't have a player and I didn't have a schedule. And we had our first training in 3 months. So that was going to be, you know, always a challenge. And what we did was we held tryouts and we prayed. And to be honest, we got very, very fortunate in the fact that there were some very good players that ended up popping up. And so that's actually one of the things when I had first started as in collegiate coaching, I got to thinking, I was like, I'm not going to hold tryouts. I want to go hand my players, blah, 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 blah. And then what all that year taught me was that obviously things unexpected can happen and that you're not perfect. And so if you hold tryouts, you know, you may not get a player from them. But at the same time, you might find players that you didn't find, if that makes sense. So one thing I learned was to make sure you exercise all possibilities. So instead of an ID camp, for example, we will hold like an open tryout week or whatever. And then, you know, go from there on the recruiting sense. And then that was year one. We were expected not to win a game. It was definitely eye-opening in terms of trying to figure out how we were going to play. And then honestly, first game came around, we were all excited and we went and got a 5-0 win. And that was amazing. And then our next game was a 2-0 win. And then we end up going 4-4 on the season, which obviously is not even, that's not even a real college season, but we couldn't get on anyone's schedule because we were so late. So right. You fast forward to the second year and we brought in 15 new players, a few Division I transfers, a few national team players. And then we won the conference, and that was an amazing run. And then we just fell just short of the national tournament. And so now, you know, this year we were really excited. It's the first year everybody was everybody from the class was recruited. It wasn't like had no idea what was going to happen in that class. And then the pandemic hit. So we're still getting along, but I think where we're at right now is a good place. We've got a really good 21 class coming in. We've got a really good team here currently. And we're just ready for them to let us go play people.
Great stuff. You know, so one of the things that I love about junior college coaches is you have to be such an exceptional recruiter, because it's like every 2 years you're having to reload, right? It's not like when you sign someone, you have them for 4 years, right? So between that and because of how young the program is, did you feel like you kind of had a little bit of not an advantage, but maybe you were more well ready to recruit during COVID at your level, at the NJCAA level?
Yes and no. I think that it just helps that I'm a serial networker as well. And all that happened is when the pandemic hit, well, obviously, so it's funny you said, like, you know, it's a 2-year restock. It's really not. It's every year. You have to bring in at least 15. We lose half of our team. And so then it's a matter of trying to identify, you know, we have our ideal style of play, and you got to identify players that fit within that. And then, you know, once you're identifying those players, and it depends on the player as well, like personalities are different, perceptions are different. And so then it comes down to, are some of the players we've identified also being recruited? And if they are, do those schools now still have offers to them because, you know, they what the COVID did was allowed schools to have seniors stay. And the fact that that happened, all that created was, okay, well, then what's going to, that put a lot of the 21s futures up in air. And so basically what we did was try and identify, okay, locally here, what are the mid majors, the D2s, what's going on with all of those schools, and the NAIs, because we're in a very good area for a sense of, like, just north of me is Belmont, Lipscomb, Lee University, number three in the country for D2 right now. Martin Methodist is 30 minutes south of us, number five in the country for NAI. I mean, William Carey is only 5 hours away from us. They're number one in the country for NAI. And so we're just trying to look around and see who was recruiting who, and are they going to be able to honor these offers? And then, you know, as you start to figure these things out, then now it's sort of a different way of identifying talent through trust that, you know, the Division I's are doing good recruiting. And then it's going to figuring out who the players are and who the players are as people, and figuring out how that fits into our model, because you could be a great player and an absolute, for lack of better terms, asshole. We don't want that, you know, and we want to make sure that you're going to fit with our team, that everyone's going to get along, and that, you know, the reality of it is we're going to spend a lot of time together, and we need to make sure that you can deal with me and I can deal with you. And so if you can't do that, then it doesn't really matter what your ability is, because then, you know, happiness and quality of life comes to play. And I think that that's all in all some of the most important things. So in terms of recruiting, all we did was look at a pool that normally is, when you try and put the talent, there's a certain level of pool. And then once you start sussing through personalities, then your pool gets a bit smaller. But then all of a sudden, you know, kids that are committed, I'm not one that normally, I won't speak to committed players much. If they tell me that we're committed, I leave them be, because I don't want coaches doing that to me. So on all of a sudden you have a massive pool open up though you didn't know was coming. And so it was just a matter of being able to adapt. And I think that that's what we JUCO coaches are probably better at than anybody, is adapting.
Right. He is Coach Colton Bryant. He is the head women's soccer coach at Columbia State Community College there in Columbia, Tennessee. So, Coach, give us a quick geographic plot point. Where exactly is, for those of our listeners that are wondering right now, where is Columbia State located? Can you tell us where that is?
Yeah, so basically, everyone in Tennessee, when someone asks where you're from, you only say like three cities, because they're all in different parts of the state, and you're usually fairly close to it. So we're literally right next to Nashville. So you've got, we're a central part of Tennessee. We're about 35, 40 minutes south of Nashville. And so it's a nice area. It's a little pocket of SEC country, along with, I think, Nashville, if I remember correctly, and I'm pretty sure, I'm about 99% sure this is true, is that Nashville's got the most colleges in a city than any other city in the country.
Yeah, I believe I've heard that before as well. Never actually referenced it, but I think I've heard that before as well. So good stuff. Yeah, Nashville, big fan of Nashville. All right, Coach. So switching gears here a little bit. So you've had a kind of recent aggressive yet friendly campaign, right, to the people out at Last Chance. You trying to welcome them, possibly do a Last Chance U soccer at the JUCO level. Tell me a little bit more about that and why does that interest you?
Got you. Yeah. So, you know, I was a fan of it when it first happened at, Eastern Mississippi. And I watched it, and obviously now it's the difference would be is the dynamic in which the drama is, because, you know, I don't have to speak to football players, and I'm sure that that requires a different approach. But in terms of why we want to do it is, a couple things. One is we're a newer JUCO, and I'm not saying being new makes a difference, but I'm saying that we're a JUCO that still gives you sort of that JUCO vibe. Like a lot of people that don't understand the JUCO world is that, like, you know, some of our people we compete with have better facilities than some D1s. In fact, there's quite a few of them. And so, like, you know, my idea of why we would do it here versus at one of those schools is the fact that it still gives that JUCO vibe to it, rather than you know, you could do it at a school like Tyler or a school Monroe or Eastern Florida, but the facilities, I mean, what they put off as, you know, last chance you is you're going somewhere to your last chance to go find that next university. And what you've seen in past seasons is, you know, I mean, in the second football season, I think it was, one of the players was literally sleeping in his car, like he was homeless. You're not going to have that at some of those bigger JUCOs. You're really not, because they're living a lavish style. I mean, Eastern Florida's on the beach. So here, what you get is, it's not necessarily rough, but what it is that still is still that environment. Like we have players. And I think we spoke about this the other day. I mean, I have a girl that, you know, she was working full time to support her family, and she left practice early just to make it to work. So she left at 5 p.m., got off at 7 a.m. We had practice at 8 a.m. the next morning, and I told her not to show up. Obviously, she just worked 12 hours and was at training and classes the day before. And here she comes strolling in at 8:15. And we happen to have a school on campus. And I you can't make it up when I say that school is the one that offered her a full ride. It's just, you know, that's a story that is different. And that's a story you don't get much, especially if you're at these, lavish ones, you know? And so I think that the side thing of that is what we wouldn't provide to Last Chance U that I know that they're probably looking for is a lot of the drama, right? But I think what we would provide is a different aspect, is like, you know, how much a culture can change a program, and also what it means to be held accountable within a culture. Because, you know, it's one thing for players to say we want something, and it's another for them to go actually do the things it takes to get it. And so instead of having to have those loud and crazy conversations like in the episodes sometimes, we can have them in a different way, in a more direct way. And I think that, you know, it's something that I think that it's an avenue that I don't think we have in this country in general. Is one, it's going to really support women's athletics. And then two, it's a sport that is the fastest growing sport in the U.S., but we're probably the last one that they've talked about to do. And so, you know, I'm all about being the oddball and doing something a bit different. And I think that if you take a chance and do something different, then big things can happen. And what I think Last Chance U should open their eyes to is the fact that soccer is a global sport. And, you know, the fact that there's such a big, in terms of TV series, and they only have around 100,000+ followers on social media, says a lot, because there's well more than 100,000 followers that would follow it just from not in our country. And I think that would grow their national brand. And I just think overall it will also, I want to help change the perception of soccer in America from the global perspective. Yeah, we have Americans now playing in Champions League, and you know, I have friends abroad that are like, oh wow, now there's Americans. I'm like, you guys are dumb. We're a massive country. And the fact that you don't think a special talent like Messi can be born somewhere else is crazy to me. And, you know, and the fact that we have so many more people means our chance of outcome is massive. And so, you know, I genuinely think we can see America pushing for World Cup titles in the next 10 years, because our best athletes are actually starting to play from a young age. In our youth, it's nothing against baseball dads and whatnot, but you know, they were doing their best in a rec environment. Well, now the rec environment are parents that played, and that naturally brings the level up. And so then the club's going to go up, and you know, it's a big snowball effect. And I think here in America, we just need to stop the whole, we're Americans not good at soccer. We need to show what we can do and why we can do it. I mean, look at our facilities. I would say that our facility is not as nice as some of the massive D1s, but I would say it's better than some of the pro clubs abroad for the women's game. And I think that it would be a good idea to open the eyes up to the other countries as to how to support women, and a good way to do it would be through this.
Absolutely. Exceptionally well said. Multiple points there. That's well said. So more so than what, you know, what some of the student athletes see on Last Chance U, because a lot of them haven't been really exposed to JUCOs on any level, maybe outside of that series, right? But more so than just that, and because we're in a pivotal period right now in terms of COVID and dead one or Division I dead periods, right? Why should more athletes legitimately consider what we know as the National Junior College Athletic Association, or JUCOs?
Yeah, so you know, then it's going to come down to setting yourself up for a better quality of life in the future. Whether that is to be a pro or a pro in life, right? So then there's the athletics, and then there's a pro in, you know, if you're studying to be a physical therapist, well, then go do it. The misconception is that JUCO academics are not good, and that's so wrong. Like, and you can see it just in it's like in Comedy Central things. You'll be like, oh yeah, they went to the local junior college. Like, that's a bad thing. And I think that's put a stigma onto the label that shouldn't exist, because here's the reality of it. We're one of the best nursing schools in the country. We have 100% NCLEX pass rate. Not many schools have that in this whole country, and we're a JUCO. And so then when parents ask me, you know, we're worried about academics and blah, 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 blah. It's a load of crap, because all of our teachers are, they're adjuncts from the universities in Nashville. They all work at the universities in Nashville. And then when you go to anyone that knows about the U.S. system, they know that when you go to college, your first 2 years is a big core curriculum. And then depending on which major you are then in, you have, you know, electives and whatnots that you can take towards that major, but you really don't start your core major work until the next 2 years. Sometimes you can pick a school for a major and you won't even be accepted into that program until 2 years later. So then my thing is why take the exact same class for, you know, $1,000 per credited hour more? And you might even, depending on if you're in Nashville or not, you might even have the same teacher for the class. And so that blows my mind. I think from a financial standpoint, specifically with a pandemic hitting, I think finances are quite important. And I think that we need to stop accepting debt as a reality and labels as a, I don't know, a big eyed figure, because it's nice to graduate from, you know, a school with, you know, a specific name. But if you're, you know, 120 grand in debt, you know what? I'm not saying you won't go in debt for those next 2 years. I'm saying we can probably minimize that for you, because there's transfer scholarships and whatnot. And I also think that, you know, in 2 years of life, you become a lot more mature and you can make maybe better decisions. But from an athletic standpoint, just to ask a player, like, from your freshman year of high school to your junior year of high school, did you get better? 9 times out of 10, they're going to say, hell yeah, I got better. I learned more. I got bigger. I got faster. I got stronger. I started to understand that the weight room, started to understand blah, 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 blah. Well, unless you think that you're at the top of your potential, the growth doesn't change. It's just the bell curve of learning does. And what it means is when you jump into the collegiate level is you're going to learn a lot faster. So then the question would be is, if you had a chance to project yourself from your freshman year of college to your junior year of college, would you be better? And most of them are going to say, yeah, because I'll be way more focused and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay, so how about player A now that is X good getting recruited by X, Y, and Z, come here for 2 years. And I bet you player A is going to be a whole new player, and they're going to be recruited by the same schools are going to be there if they're 4-year university. So if they were recruiting you 2 years before, then we'll see how much they really liked you. But what you might find is the fact that you're what you thought you were being exposed to is a lot smaller than I guess athletes view things as like mini ponds. So when you get plugged into somewhere like here, specifically here, because we're very good about getting our athletes exposed and making sure that, you know, there's enough content on each of them that want to move on, that they're going to be seen by people all over the country. And they might find that their little pond is not even near as big as the ocean. And that, you know, it's just think it's a matter of betting on yourself. And if you're someone that has a big dream and you want to accomplish it and you want to minimize your debt, I think that this is a route that this route is more controlling, because you can control what you want, and you'll be more hands-on in your own process, because we'll be teaching you about the process through the 2 years. And then kids are probably eye-rolling saying, well, we're learning about that now. And they don't know half of it. And, you know, that's the fun part, is educating them on that and seeing them sort of grow. Because, I mean, look at the average college student. They change their major 4 to 5 times. Well, we can get that done for you without you. You can go through that exact same process and not pay as much money for it. And then end up with the same degree later on at the same school you were going to go to. And, you know, maybe a much bigger scholarship, both academically and athletically.
Right. So, you know, one of the things I particularly like, and I appreciate kind of part of when you and I started first communicating, networking, I should say, and then collaborating a bit was that I noticed as a JUCO coach, you're really, you're an exceptional grinder.
I lost you.
So what I noticed, Coach, is that you're very much, you're, as a recruiter, you're a grinder, and you're very much a leave no stone unturned in terms of not just locally or there in Tennessee, but also nationally and internationally. But for our listeners, you know, talk a little bit about what are your thoughts on the talent here in Texas and maybe even here in the borderland region in my area in El Paso. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes. So I've always known that there was talent in Texas. Like Texas is a hotbed. And what I mean by that is the clubs do a good job of recruiting, but at the same time, there's a lot of kids in Texas that just watch the game more. Like it's not like that the people are born in one state and are naturally better soccer players, but I think that, you know, it goes back to Tom's thing of soccer starts at home. And I think what you find in Texas is soccer is all sports in Texas are a big sport because Texas take athletics very seriously. And that's one thing Texas is awesome about. But I think what I find very fascinating is the styles of play that can come out of Texas. I think that you might find some more flair and some more, a more exciting style from a specific individual. And I think in Texas, what you find is there's a lot more players that are willing to take players on one-on-one than other places. Now, someone from another state's thinking, oh, yeah, right, I've got so-and-so on my team. And I'm not talking about a club or a team. I'm talking about as a whole. And I think what you find is there's a lot of kids in Texas that just, I don't know how to explain it other than they express themselves differently. And I don't even think it's difference in coaching. I think it's just comes down to the soccer they grow up around. And then there's a lot of, you know, Central and South American population that watch the Liga MX a lot. And that's a different, I don't care what anyone says. I'm not saying it's better or worse than the MLS, but it's a different style of play entirely. And if you watch the women's Liga MX, I mean, everyone would be like, oh, the NWSL is better. Well, yeah, it's better. But there's some very exciting things that happen in Liga MX and especially on the women's side. And I think it's just fascinating. And I'm very big on flair. I love flair. And so I want players to, you know, people will say players with flair might give away the ball too much. Yeah, but they keep every defender guessing on what they're going to do. And if we can collectively know what we're going to do while making sure that we have players that make the other team wonder what we're going to do, I think that that's pretty dangerous. So in Texas, and specifically what I'm learning in El Paso is there's a pocket of space that maybe eyes aren't on. And I'm, you know, as you said, I like to flip over stones. And so just because other eyes aren't there, I want to make sure that my eyes are, and I want to make sure that I want to speak to as many players that would be realistic for us as possible, because, you know, I think at the end of the day, we all want to build our team the best we can. And if we can, I don't care where you're from. If you're a baller, you're a baller. And I just think specifically that if we're able to find the kids in little pockets like El Paso, others aren't, then I'm going to happily capitalize on that.
Well said. Absolutely. If you're a baller, you're a baller. You heard it here first. All right. So, so as we start to transition here, Coach, tell us kind of in a few sentences, in your own words, obviously, what can we expect from Columbia State going forward this fall in particular and beyond?
Some excitement, man. I think what you can expect is to see a brand that normally isn't seen in the collegiate game across most divisions. I think and I'm not saying possessive is the way to go or direct is wrong. I'm saying that I wouldn't consider us possessive or direct. I would consider us a program of decision makers and learning how to make decisions both off the ball and on the ball that can impact tremendously. And then, you know, depending on how those decisions are made will then impact speed of play. But I think what you'll find with us is an organized group that has a pretty good idea of what they're going to do. And then this year, what we've done is we've built something dangerous, and next year we've built something deadly. And I say that next year we've built something deadly as it's here, but where I'm very aware of what our weapons we have now are, and it's very good. Like I feel like I've got four new signings from four of my returning sophomores, because it comes back to what I was saying before. They came in their freshman year with one mentality, and they came back with a whole entirely different one. One being they came back way more fit. One being they came back ready to compete in preseason. Wherein sometimes some athletes, because they're good, they think I'm going to go and I'm going to dominate preseason, and they get here and get their asses handed to them. And I think that that's a good thing. And so we had some players come back dead serious and ready to go. And they brought the environment and the mindsets of the freshmen coming in up. And I think next year it's only going to continue to improve. And that's not a diss to players going out. These players going out created a pathway for us to go in and not grab necessarily better players, but grab more of the same players. Because right now we've got a well-rounded team and some special talents, and we've got a lot of special talents coming in next year, and we'll still be a very well-rounded team. And I don't know. I think it's exciting. I think what you'll find is that if you watch us and you watched us play against a four-year school, which we have film of, if anyone wants to reach out and see it. I think that if you didn't know who was who, you wouldn't think we were not the four-year school.
He's Coach Colton Bryant, head women's soccer coach at Columbia State Community College in Columbia, Tennessee. All right, Coach, don't go anywhere. We're going to bring you right back for our counterattack segment. And listeners, we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
I'm excited for this one. Counterattack segment. I like the name.
And welcome back to the 50-50 podcast presented by Physical Athletics. Our proud partner is Physical Athletics. You can find them on all social media platforms at Physical Athletic. That's F-Y-Z-I-C-A-L Athletic. As well as on their website at physicalathletics.com. So, Coach Bryant, we got you. We're ready. Counterattack. You ready to get stuck in?
Let's go.
All right. First question right out of the gate. Annie, as a coach, obviously, these pertain to you as a coach. Not as a player. So you got to switch hats here. Okay. Any pregame or postgame rituals?
Yeah. I talk to myself a lot, oddly enough. And it's more of my thing is I want to reflect on personalities and how personalities have progressed. And what I mean by that is you might have a girl that came in really confident. And like I said, in the last segment, they come in confident and then they get a rude awakening. And then, you know, that could shift confidence. So I want to see where everybody's confidence level is, and figure out which players I need to speak to. You may, you know, send that text to and make them smile, you know. And I think that that's where my mind is at. And aside that, it's just, believe it or not, it's not even worrying about watching more film on the opposition. It's more of just wanting to make sure mindsets are right and figuring out what I'm going to say pregame, because we do a tactical talk, and then the tactical talk is like literally 2 hours before the game, so I don't have to say anything about that before the game. But right before we go on, I just want to say something to, you know, bring out their why a bit more. And so I need to identify with my why. So I'd say my biggest pregame ritual is really bringing myself back to my why and trying to figure out, you know, how to bring their why out of them through passion of the game.
Nice. You know, you scared me there for a second. I thought you were going to say you talk to yourself because nobody else will listen to you. So you scared me there for a second there. All right.
Oh, no.
Okay. So other sport, if not soccer, obviously other sport you would have coached in another life.
Now that I've gotten in big with soccer coaching, I would say basketball, because of the fact that most kids are growing up in environments in elementary school that their gym classes make hand-eye coordination way better than foot-eye coordination. I think that the patterns we do within soccer and the way we can talk about exploiting space because of soccer, I really think it would be very simple to be a basketball coach as long as you found the players that could already shoot and defend. Because the ball movement and everything would be really, really simple, because there's not much outside of one person falling out.
Right. Okay. Awesome. Other profession you would have done if not a coach?
Man, I have no clue. I would have had to end up like being, I have no clue. If I was thinking, looking back now, I would try and go and be like a, I guess, culture coordinator for corporate companies, is trying to, like, you know, most people get promotions because they're good at their job, but they're not necessarily trained on being a man manager or woman manager. And so I think that's what I would like to do if I wasn't a coach. Now, if I wasn't a coach, would I have that perspective? No clue.
Right.
No clue.
Yeah, no, that's a good answer though. That's a different one, but I like it. All right. So now, favorite Netflix series or other show on another platform you've been able to really binge watch during the pandemic?
Dude, I've watched all of them. I really, really, really like the All-American series. But lately, like I said, we acquired a VO, so I watched less Netflix, and I've probably watched our trainings back at least 2 to 3 times per training each, and then the 2 scrimmages we played, I know I've watched binge watch VO more than anything.
Nice. Okay, VO is definitely a first when I ask about Netflix series or favorite watching series. All right, I like it. Okay, now, so in sticking with that kind of theme, soccer-specific series, 3 of them, assuming you've seen all 3, which has been your favorite? Your the all-or-nothing Tottenham, the Sunderland Till I Die season 2, and Ted Lasso, which one?
So I haven't seen Ted Lasso, and I'm really, really pissed about that. I need to get Apple TV. But in the other 2, I would say I like them both equally, but I'm going to put Tottenham first because I think I really like the aspect of how Mourinho is willing to speak to players. I really like the aspect that he treats them like professionals that they are. And I'm able to show our players that, and like, you know, I speak to you much differently. You better be happy about it. No, I really like the Sunderland series because of how I think hardship is valuable. And it doesn't end in a massive smile. It ends, you know, they say others, but the way it ends. It's very real. Like that, even at the pro game, it's not all smiles. Yeah, they're making people say pros make loads of money. They should be happy no matter what. But like pros are pros because they're addicted to their lifestyle and they're addicted to their game. And when their game is a loss, that's tough. And I think that Sunderland series really highlights that.
Yeah, absolutely. So this next one ruffles a lot of feathers. So you tell favorite and least favorite soccer team.
Oh, I got Liverpool and Man United or Everton. And I would have to say Everton, because as a Liverpool supporter, screw Everton. But the only reason I'm not old, right? So I don't have like the deep hatred for United because of the past. I have a deep hatred for United because of the people that are United fans that did partake in the past, and the fact that, you know, the present is reality and Liverpool is awesome.
Right. So big, big major kudos to you, as I'm sure you know. I'm also a big Liverpool.
I've lost you somewhat.
All right, big kudos to you. As I'm sure you might know, I'm also a gigantic Liverpool fan. One of my biggest mentors played for them. So, yeah, absolutely. Kudos to you. All right, now, non-soccer. All right, any other sport? All right, favorite and least favorite teams, non-soccer.
Oklahoma City Thunder. I'm from Oklahoma. And then least favorite, Miami Heat, because – that dang 3 that he hit late in the game in the playoffs that then moved it to, I think it was even in the series, and then they went on to beat us. Miami Heat.
All right. That's a first. All right. Both of them, Thunder and the Heat. That's a first. All right. All right. Next one. So any secret talent, any hidden talent that not very many people may know about you?
I don't know if I have any. I don't know what would be a talent no one knew. I don't know. Honestly, I have no clue. You've got me. I don't know what to say. And there's not many times I don't know what to say.
All right.
So, yeah, no, I've got nothing. I think it's more of all I can really do is I think I'm good at reading people, but my girls will tell me otherwise at times. But most of us coaches, that we all think that. So I would say that's my thing is, other than that, nothing too special. I keep telling my parents all the time, like, I'm lucky I was born when I was, because back in the day when you couldn't make money to be a soccer coach and make a living with it, then, you know, I don't know what I would do.
you're not the first coach to say that. So they're so dedicated to the craft, right, that they can't even think, let alone identify of something else. So no shame there. All right. So funniest that you can share, funniest moment with a recruit or with, you know, with the recruit and their parents while you're on the recruiting trail.
Oh, I've got a good one, but I'm not sure it'd be good to share.
okay.
Funniest, my man. You run into, so when you're recruiting, you run into a lot of funny things and different right. personalities and whatnot. And like whether it's reading an email that says "What's up, coach?" with a WUZZ, and you know, I actually respond to those, believe it or not. I think they're fascinating. I think it has a bit of a personality within it. But no, I would say I won't even mention the name of the player, but I think the funny one will be good. Is that I was introduced to them with an entirely different name. So like they had a whole different name than who they actually were. And as we got through the process, I was able to sort that out. And it was very, very interesting. She's from an interesting area in Orlando. And she just this would have been like a month ago. It wasn't necessarily while recruiting. We had already committed her. And she texts me and she's like, "Yo, coach, I have this massive bruise on my leg." And I'm thinking, "What have you done?" And she goes, "I was playing pickup and got hit by her house arrest bracelet." Now, maybe that's not too funny, but to me it was, because if you know the kid, it's like,
yeah.
She's a very soulful kid, and where she's from is very interesting. And the fact that, I don't know, it's funny just the way she even said it. But aside that, no, I think most of the recruiting stuff is funny. I mean, I went to Barcelona in Salou, and we did like a coach's inspection visit, and we took like 80 coaches through DB Sports Tours. And in them, so basically when you go to eat, there's one area and it's like a sports resort, and you go to eat and everybody there, they go eat in the same place. Well, the U17 German women's national team, the French and the English were all there. Well, believe it or not, in the middle of, we had no clue about this in Barcelona. I'm walking up, I'm getting some food off the buffet, and I look over and the kid I was recruiting is literally standing next to me, and she plays for the U17 English national team. Now, should I have realized that she might have been there? Yes, but that did not go in my mind at all. It was my first time in Barcelona, so I wasn't thinking recruiting at all, and I'm getting some potatoes, and I look over and she's like, "Are you Colton from Columbia State?" I'm like, "Yes, I am." that was fun.
Small world, I guess, right?
Very, very small world.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a different one as well. All right, so final question, coach. Here's the one that I ask everybody. Post-pandemic, when clear, we've kind of returned to our normal, or what our new normal may be. Sunday dinner, all right? You got all the family over. You got family coming in from out of town visiting you. You're the chef. What are you cooking?
Massive steaks, loads of them. Steaks, chicken, I'll grill. Everyone else has to bring the side stuff.
Yeah, you sound like me. You sound exactly like me.
Yes, I love some steak now. And I think I get it from my mom, because every time mom's like, "Hey, will you meet me for lunch?" "Sure, where are we going to go?" She always goes, "Let's go to Betty's. I want a big steak."
All right. Well, coach, this has been great. This has been exceptional. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. And kind of before we let you go, for our listeners that may be interested, where can they find more information? Where can they connect with you, or where can they connect? They want to get more information on Columbia State, and any other final words that you might have for us.
I heard your question, but when you say
where can they connect with you, or also any listeners that might want to get more information on Columbia State, where can they find that information? And also just any final words that you might have for our listeners.
So our website is www.columbiastate.edu, and it's Columbia, like Columbia, not like country, Columbia. And then for me, it's at Coach Colton. It's Colton. Twitter, Instagram, YouTube even. I have a couple rants on YouTube from a couple years ago. It's kind of funny. But I would say, you know, about our program, I'm a very transparent person. I think what our recruits like and our players that are currently here like is the fact that everything they read on social media is exactly the way it is here, because it's not about trying to put bait to catch someone. It's about speaking what you believe and hopefully attracting them. And so I would say, if you're interested in us, research us. And, you know, if you're not big on developing yourself as a person, if that's something you don't want to focus on, if you're just that gym rat, you know, it's okay to be a gym rat. But I think if you're not willing to develop personally, we're not the program for you, but happy to speak to anybody.
Well said. Thank you, Coach. And, you know, again, from all of us here at the 50-50 podcast, we're delighted to have you. Thank you for your time. And I look forward to catching up with you down the road on the recruiting trail, and maybe even collaborating with you some more in the future, Coach. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you.
And for our listeners, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back shortly after a word from our sponsors.